The world might be going mobile, but it'll be a long time before regular computers disappear. Maybe that's why Microsoft and Apple spend so much time and money on their core operating systems. Microsoft's newest operating system, Windows 10, released yesterday. Curtis Franklin is the executive editor of technical content at Information Week. He joins me now with more on what's new in this version and how the latest OS rollout could affect large organizations like federal offices. Curtis, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. It's my pleasure.
All right. So from a personal standpoint, if someone were to download it on their own machine, what would look different?
Well, the big thing is that if you have been using something like Windows 8, Windows 7 or Windows 8, much will look the same. But the nice thing is you'll also have many of those old familiar things available to you so that you really have the option. You can go all the new, or you can still use all those old shortcuts, all those old techniques that you had under your fingers and in your muscle memory to do things. They really try to offer users the best of both worlds in Windows 10.
Because with respect to Windows 8, there wasn't much best about it, really, was there?
For most people, there was not. It took the phrase "the shock of the new" to a real extreme.
Yeah. All right. So let's talk about organizations, because I think most large groups, especially federal agencies, are mostly on Windows 7. A few even still on Vista. And so, what should they be doing about Windows 10 if you've got large numbers of Windows 7 machines?
Well, the nice thing is that with Windows 10, two things are true. One, many of the machines that you have, if you're running Vista or Windows 7, will run Windows 10. You'll have to check, especially things like video cards, but most of them will run the new operating system. The other is that much less training of or retraining of your users will be required. And that's important because that's where a lot of the cost comes in, having to retrain people on the way that they've learned to do things. So this is one where I would say that agencies can look at going ahead, trial it with a few people, make sure that those shortcuts, make sure that all those old ways of doing things still work, but then ask the important question, are my applications Windows 10 ready? And if they are, then it's time to put a plan in place for moving forward.
Now, suppose an IT group was to test this. Does Microsoft, when you download, often, you know, there's scanning that goes on, and they'll tell you whether your machine is compatible, whether you've got enough memory, and so forth. Is there any shortcut to finding out whether your applications, like Adobe or something, are compatible?
Well, at this point, most of the time, if you've got a commercial application, you can go to the vendor's website. They will tell you whether the existing versions are Windows 10 compatible or whether you need to go ahead and do an upgrade in order to get Windows 10 compatibility. The hard part's going to be if you have developed applications within your agency, within your group, then you'll have to have your own developers do some checking before you know for sure.
And in your view, just looking across industry from, you know, the perch there at Information Week, does it look like most of the mainstream applications, I mentioned, you know, Adobe, because that's so widely used, their whole suite of things and similar types of widely deployed apps, do they tend to be Windows 10 compatible? Have they had the time to prepare for it?
They have had the time to prepare for it. Microsoft has done a very good job of seeding their developers with early versions of Windows 10, making sure that they have the opportunity to do so. So if you have applications from the major software publishers, you should be in good shape. The places you have to look out for is if you are using utilities or applications from some very small publishers, or, as I said, if you've developed applications in-house.
And, of course, so many applications, especially cloud applications, run inside a browser. Do we know whether Chrome and Firefox, which have really become popular as alternatives to the usuals, do they tend to work okay with Windows 10?
Chrome and Firefox are both prepared for Windows 10. There should be no problem with either of those. Of course, Microsoft does have their brand new browser that they're going to be trying to get people to work with, but that's one where there are an awful lot of changes. So again, if you have some very specific browser-based applications going on, you need to do some very thorough checking out of those with any of these three browsers that your users have on their desktops before you make sure and go ahead and do the move.
And if people are using Windows 7 in large numbers, that means they don't have touch screens, because I think almost all the machines that coming with Windows 8 were also touch screen machines. is Windows 10, in your view so far, does it work okay with mouse keyboard type of system versus also with a touchscreen system if you have one of those convertible type tablet PCs?
That's one of the things that, in the views of a lot of people, Microsoft really got right this time. They recognize that not everyone has a touchscreen machine or wants a touchscreen machine on their desk. So with Windows 10, all of those mouse or trackpad movements will work. And for a lot of the really nifty new features, Microsoft has included keyboard shortcuts. So you can learn a very quick couple of keystrokes to get a lot of the great new features in Windows 10 active on your machine without having to get dirty smudges all over your screen.
Yeah, I hate when that happens. We're speaking with Curtis Franklin. He's the executive editor for technical content at Information Week, a publication I've been reading assiduously for many, many years. And now Microsoft is offering Windows 10 free for the time being to people that have Windows 8. What about if you have Windows 7, and do we know anything yet about the volume license agreements for enterprise users of any of the versions of Windows?
They are offering the free upgrade for 1 year for people who have authorized versions of Windows 7 or Windows 8. And one of the nice things is if you are an individual especially, you can move to Windows 10 and you have 30 days where you can back down. If you get to it and decide, you know, this just isn't for me, you can back down to your previous Windows 8 or Windows 7. And another thing that Microsoft is doing, they are finally going through and doing some pretty massive overhauls of their mass licensing agreements, greatly simplifying things. So this is one of those times when if you do have an enterprise-class license, you should be talking to your Microsoft representative, because the odds are very good that new options are available to you. They're trying to move more people to a subscription model, where you don't do a universal license for a particular version of the operating system. You go ahead, do a subscription so that you have the ability to remain up to date on Microsoft, just as you do with, say, Office 365 for the Windows Office applications.
Now, so when an individual is using Microsoft products, you have to have an account now, and that's something they've innovated in the last couple of years. You've got to have an account with all the vendors that you're working with. Someone, an individual that's part of a large group, is this something that only the network administrators can handle in terms of the downloads, or can individuals do it that are under a volume license agreement that don't have their own account at Microsoft?
This is one where you'll need to check with your network administrator, because, as I said, there are changes that are being made to the options that are available to large organizations. And so you'll need to check with your particular administrator to find out whether your organization has taken advantage of one of those new options, or whether you're going to do the, we'll call it classic upgrade cycle, where you'll wait until the administrator downloads a master version and then pushes it out to all the users. This is one where there are still right now in this transition period a lot of options available, so you'll need to check with your own administrator to find out which your organization is taking advantage of.
And if you're a CIO, what are the planning issues you should keep in mind if you want to say, let's get with Windows 10 and finally get everybody up to date?
Well, this is one where if I'm the CIO, one of the things I'm looking at is my hardware upgrade cycle as well, because this is an opportunity if you're reaching end of life on your current fleet of desktops. It's a great opportunity to go ahead, upgrade both of them at the same time. If you're in the middle of a cycle, then the nice thing is you can go ahead, look at Windows 10, be reasonably sure that it will work on your existing hardware, and give your users a great new experience, as well as giving your administrators a lot of additional management and security options with Windows 10 without having to do the mass hardware upgrade that many of the previous updates to Windows required.
Are some of the issues with respect to the processor itself, or is it simply the way in which Windows 10 uses memory?
There are a handful of processor issues. Windows 10 does, in fact, make use of a couple of CPU commands that were not available in earlier versions of the CPU. It's also making making use of some security functions that Intel is now building into CPUs that have happened in the last, say, 3 or 4 years. And that's why I said if you're reaching the end of life, getting out towards what for many people is a 5-year cycle, then you need to be careful. And you need to use the tools that Microsoft does provide that can go in, run a test, and tell you if you have one of those older CPUs that doesn't have the instructions that Windows 10 needs. But if you are in the middle of a cycle, if most of the desktops or laptops in the hands of your users are 2 to 3 years old, you should be in pretty good shape.
And so you mentioned notebooks also throw into that same equation.
Absolutely. Because from an instructional basis, Intel has done a pretty good job of mapping and keeping its desktop and laptop processors in lockstep in terms of the instruction sets they were using. So anything in the last 2 or 3 years should probably be okay. Beyond that, you'll need to run those compatibility tools just to make sure.
Because there are a couple of versions. There are desktop notebook versions of the processors. Then there's the mobile versions, but they generally are the same with respect to instruction sets and simply differ in how they handle power.
Typically, there are a handful of additional instructions that have to do with the particular needs of a laptop, and most of them, as you point out, do deal with power because that's the key consideration when you move into any sort of portable or mobile form factor. But the base instruction set is pretty similar between the two, and as I said, Intel has done a good job of keeping those in lockstep on both their families of processors, whether they're intended for a laptop or intended for a desktop.
And what about AMD? Are they still in the processor business there too?
AMD is still in the processor business, although across the last couple of years, you really have to look pretty hard to find a machine that comes from a mass market dealer that has an AMD chip in it. AMD is going through a cycle right now where they are once again trying to make a push into the desktop market, and it will be interesting to see if they succeed. Frankly, I hope they do because I believe that competition is good. It makes everybody in the market better. But by and large, again, if you bought a machine in the last couple to 3 years, it's almost certainly got an Intel chip inside.
All right. And just a final question. I presume you have played a little bit with Windows 10. Do you like it?
I do like it. In many ways, Windows 10 is what a lot of people were hoping for when Windows 8 came along. And people are sort of making the comparison of what Windows 7 was to Vista. Windows 10 is to Windows 8. In other words, Microsoft is a learning organization. They took a lot of the lessons, a lot of the feedback that they got from users after the Windows 8 experience, put them into Windows 10. So this is one where if you are one of the cool kids who has been on the Macintosh platform,
That's me. Because
of what it would provide that Windows didn't, this is an opportunity where in some ways Microsoft has jumped ahead of what Apple is providing. So it brings it certainly into parity with the Macintosh in terms of features and functions, and perhaps most important in terms of stability and robustness. This is an operating system that, based on everything I have seen, everything I've experienced, will not leave you stranded if you go ahead and move to Windows 10. So I think this is going to mean a lot of exciting times ahead for those who, for whatever reason, need or want to be on a Microsoft platform.
So Mr. Nardella won't have to go buy a basketball team.
I don't believe so. I think he's going to be able to stay profitably and happily employed there at the head of Microsoft for some time to come.
All right. Curtis Franklin is the executive editor of technical content at Information Week. Thanks so much for joining us.
It's been my pleasure.